on.
Small world, man. You don't meet a lot of Miata racers on the podcast. So that's,
you don't.
How does that make you feel? Is it nice to?
Yeah, it's good to find my people.
Are you a Miata guy?
Huge.
According to them, yes.
Yeah, pretty big.
Huge.
Yeah. It started, honestly, this started like episode one. There was a comment made about a Miata, and unfortunately, you know how things go. They got legs, and once the fans started leaning into it.
You think it was the fans or was it you two assholes?
Well, once the fans started leaning into it and we realized the disdain that Phil had for it. Then,
and his impeccable lap times and the way that he late trail breaks. And you know.
Yeah, we couldn't let it go and we won't let it go.
All right, back to the bourbon.
Yeah. So tell us
about
this.
We've talked enough about us.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. I am Josh Henning.
I'm Phil Gerber.
I'm Jeremy Gerber.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. Today's guest is founder of Infused Spirits and Broken Barrel Whiskey Company, Seth Benheim. Seth Benheim is the master blender behind Broken Barrel Whiskey, a popular craft brand celebrated for its creative barrel finishing techniques. You can learn more about Broken Barrel Whiskey by visiting Broken Barrel Whiskey by visiting brokenbarrelwhiskey.com, on Instagram at Broken Barrel Whiskey, and keep up with Seth at Benheim Whiskey. Seth, welcome to Oil and Whiskey.
Thank you guys for having me. Very excited.
I would say cheers, but we haven't cracked anything yet. So we've got these amazing little taster samplers here from Broken Barrel. So I've got them in order of proof. What do you suggest we start with? Because we're planning on going to kill them all tonight.
Those little guys sitting up there. I'm curious about them.
First of all, I think your guys' little setup there looks fantastic, and I wish I was sitting at the table drinking with y'all. So that looks really cool. Well, I like the signage above the bar. That's kind of nice. I really like that a lot.
It's nice to see some liquor bottles in the background. Usually we've got to really poke at people to pour themselves a drink.
Yeah, it's usually like cars and shop
in
the background.
Some more over there.
Nice. Yeah.
And then there's one of my employees working. Looks like he's working.
That's quite
cool setup.
Not terrible. And then over here we got a little bit more, but
what's your bottle count?
Seven.
I stopped counting after 1700.
Damn.
So more than that.
Do you still, with 1700, when you're like have a couple buddies by and you're like wanting to pour something, are you still kind of like, man, I don't know. I wish I had.
I've given up all. There's probably a few bottles I say, hey, don't just go nuts and drink the whole thing, but that's probably 20 or 30 bottles out of the whole lot. So if somebody was like, all right, I'm going to kill this bottle of Lafroy, I better go for it. You know, there's others. There's other whatever they got or. You know, plus we have all the Broken Barrel stuff here in the room. So, it, you know, that alone is 15, 20 bottles, different stuff. I mean, you could try just Broken Barrel and not even touch these bottles and you'd be not driving home. I say that.
That makes me feel good about like my collection that I don't feel like I'm an addict now. It seems perfectly normal.
It
now.
Seems normal.
Yeah.
I don't. So what should we start with?
Let's start with the, I think you got the California oak there, right?
We do.
That's the proof.
Yep.
Should have a slight, you know, wine-ish purple color on the label.
Okay. So while he's pouring that, tell us about this one and the idea behind it.
Yeah. Well, in general, so Broken Barrel, everything we make is considered a finished whiskey. And so you're going to have all of the bottles we sell be finished with at least one or more different barrel types. Now, I think four of the five you have on the desk there are going to be finished with three or more different types of barrels in tandem. And the fun part about this is it's not just with barrels. We actually take hammers, axes, so keep them by my desk here, but these are all of the different tools and, you know, splitting mauls, sledgehammers, pickaxes. We've got all kinds of different tools here. And if you go to our website or our social media, you'll see myself and the team getting together and smashing and obliterating barrels out in the parking lot and you know, out on different locations at distilleries. We've been all over the country doing this, breaking different barrels with different groups. You know, we find different unique types of barrels and try to combine them with each other to create the most interesting and unique whiskeys we can. Not only that will complement the base whiskey, but that will, as a finished product, stand out from the other whiskeys available, because there's a lot of whiskey out there. There's a lot of finished whiskey out there. We try to be as unique and different as possible. So, you know, a good example of that, someone sent us an email this morning saying, do you guys want to buy some Amburana barrels? And I said, no, it's been done. We're over it. And then I sent them the meme of, I think it was Ryan Gosling holding Steve Carell's face going, be better than the Gap. You know, like, we're just not doing, like, oh, everyone's doing Amburana. Should we do Amburana? I'm like, no, let's not do Amburana. Let's do the next thing. What's next? What's not been done? What combinations haven't been tried out yet? So I think I just registered a PX Sherry Cask finished wheat whiskey today, so we'll see how that one turns out.
That sounds interesting, actually.
That does. Yeah, trying to do stuff like that. So to the bottle you guys are trying now, that's our California Oak. It's a Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey finished with California Central Coast Cabernet barrels and French oak barrels. So it's about 80%, and we call this combination of barrels our oak bill. You know, combination of grains is mash bill.
Yep.
Combination of barrels is oak bill. Not too complicated, hopefully, for anyone to kind of grasp the concept. If they understand what a mash bill is, you know, baby steps to get to oak bill.
That's sweet.
And yeah. Go ahead, give it a try. 88 proof. Give that a try.
Yeah, it's good. It is sweet.
Sweet.
Not in a bad way. Yeah. Sweet.
Sweet, easy
but
drink.
But still bourbon-y, not sweet when you get, you know.
So I was on your website, and I saw you kicking the crap out of a whiskey barrel. And I was wondering, like, so what do you do with, you destroy a whiskey barrel. What are you doing with, like, what's the remainder of the staves, or what happens there?
Yeah.
Or is it so just for, like, to let some aggression out?
PC load letter error.
The aggression part of it, you know, certainly we have a stress-free office. We made it through COVID, real easy getting through doing what we do. But the concept, if you get into the weeds on it and sort of the nerdy, geeky aspect of it, you know, people leave wood out, you know, coopers and barrel craftsmen will leave wood out to be seasoned. The elements, the outside of the wood, the barrel is going to be conditioned by weather, external environments. For a sherry cask, it might be kept in a very, you know, cool, damp underground space in a cellar in Spain, or, you know, a distillery in Scotland might actually leave barrels outside, and cooperages and distilleries in Kentucky might leave their barrels, obviously, in a, you know, metal or brick or wood rickhouse. And so the different elements and environments that these barrel exteriors sit within are going to have all kinds of different flavor components and nutrients, minerals, acids, flavors that are going to come out and show through the wood exterior, just like whatever the contents were that were in the interior. And so by adding not just the interior, but the exterior of the barrel to each whiskey, you are getting a whole different array of flavors. We obviously do a wash on the barrels. We do a filtration to make sure there's no particles or sediment or anything like that. You're getting a whole different level of flavors from the exterior.
Do you put the entire barrel's worth of staves in when you're finishing?
Depending on the batch size, generally, yes. We do single barrels here in California. We have a small tasting room and warehouse where, you know, about half of our staff are located in Southern California. And so we're spread out between, you know, Carlsbad and all the way up to Northern California, but, you know, Santa Barbara area, Montecito. So we've got a bunch of folks that will come in, and we do private barrel selections and single barrel dumps. And so we're not using, you know, a whole barrel of one type of barrel. We're probably going to use half of one, half of another, maybe a quarter or a third of another type of barrel. and we'll put them all those staves into a 55-gallon drum, and then we'll dump a barrel over that. So in that instance, no, it's not a whole barrel of each type. But, you know, in Kentucky, where we're making 95% of our whiskey, that is going to be lots and lots of whole barrels used of French oak, of sherry cask, of ex-bourbon, you know, whatever goes into the oak bill. We're buying tons of barrels.
Are you finishing for the same amount of time across the line, or are they finished at different times as well?
It varies based on when we start and when we need to dump and bottle based on bottling schedules. So we've done 7 month, we've done 3 month, we've done, in the peak of the heat of summer, we've done maybe 45 days even. I've done 21 months for special projects, so almost 2 year finishes.
How much of a difference can you tell with a 2 year old bourbon finished for a year and finished for 2 years?
Oh, it's Matt. I mean, finishing is tantamount to aging in my mind. So you're adding flavor faster than if the whiskey were to sit traditionally and just age in the interior of its original barrel or even a finishing barrel. So I would equate, you know, let's call it 2x, right? And not, that's not a scientific answer, but mm-hmm. just kind of a roundabout, you know, easy numbers. Let's say 45 days really is tantamount to 90 days on just the interior of a barrel if you're using the exterior of the barrel, because you're also getting kind of two times the amount of surface area of oak. And there's so much, you know, discussion around surface area. There's companies that are adding wood inserts. They're popping them down the bunghole and into the barrel to float around with the whiskey in the interior of a barrel. You have Maker's Mark that's lowering a ring with a bunch of new, you know, finished or seasoned or infrared toasted oak. You know, they've been doing that way before we were. And they've been doing with all the new oak. Now, we don't really mess around too much with new oak. We do a little bit here and there, but we also love to get, you know, rum barrels, and there's obviously not new oak, and sherry cask. And one of the ones you'll try has apple brandy cask, you know, Calvados or those kinds of, you know, we've done Sauterne, we've done Mizunara, we've done a lot. So the difference is really palpable. You can see it in the color, you can smell it on the nose, you can taste it in the body, richness, flavor. I mean, blind, if you didn't know these were younger whiskeys, you may not be able to tell immediately. And part of that is the oak bill, the process, the finish, the exterior of the barrels. That's all contributing to that kind of sensory journey you're going to take from color, seeing it, smelling it, tasting it, all that.
It sounds like it's just a massive amount of ingredients going together. Do you guys have like an idea when you're, you know, trying something new, what combinations of wood you're going to put in what kind of whiskey and what you think the end result is going to be? Or is it still
a lot
of...
Yeah, we can test it on a small batch. We can break a barrel up, take a stave. Like, I have some test barrels here of coffee liqueur. I know I'm going to do it. I just don't know how much to use. So we'll try to rationalize the weight of a whole, you know, of weight of the average weight of a stave. And then we'll take the average weight of the stave and we will try, call it a liter bottle, and we'll cut little slats and weigh the slats and then put them in there and see how quickly flavor color starts to settle in over time. Leave it out there in the warehouse, which is not air conditioned or anything like that. So it's not temperature controlled. If it's a hot day, it's a hot day, right? So we're going to see what happens this time of year getting started, and we'll kind of gauge and just say, okay, you know what, this is going to be really good with, like, and that's the beauty of, you know, we give you the ratio of staves to each other and the total kind of combination of number of staves used. But if we find that based on the batch size or the strength and potency of a particular type of oak or barrel that we were using is really potent, like honey is so sweet, and Amberana is really strong. Not that we're using too much of that right now, but we just did one in the past and we found it to be very strong. We thought we were going to do 30% Amberana and we ended up doing 5% Amberana or 15%. I can't remember. It was like a small, we cut it in half because it was too potent when we went to go register the final label. And the other part of this is that we you know, we're not married to, hey, we're not guaranteeing you 100 staves every time. You know, it may be 20 staves, but the ratio is still 40, 40, 20, right? As long as you keep that ratio, we are honoring the oak bill and the mash bill, right? They're not telling you how many pounds of grain go into the mash bill.
Right.
Right. It's not quite that hyper detailed. So, but yeah, we're transparent. We'll tell you the batch size. We'll tell you, we can guesstimate on special projects exactly how many staves were used. And, you know, if someone comes and does a single barrel pick with us for their whiskey club or group, we can break that down.
Is all of your bourbon and straight whiskey coming from the same place?
Yes, except for the Americana you guys will taste. That incorporates an MGP light whiskey blended with a Owensboro, Kentucky bourbon.
Okay.
So it's a blend of two different states and two different categories of whiskey. But, you know, the one I registered today is a wheat whiskey. Everything here in California is like, we'll do shit from anywhere. Like anyone in America, we don't do... We don't do whiskey from like Canada. We're not going to import like Scottish grain or malt or anything like that. So what we're doing here in LA is definitely more of a exploratory one-off, like random hodgepodge. So we've worked with local distilleries like Los Angeles Distillery. I drove down to Mexico and picked up Mexican Nebbiolo and Cabernet barrels and brought those back up to LA across the border.
Make sure
I got stopped twice.
I was going to say that would be interesting border crossing.
Yeah, I just got these barrels from Mexico.
They're knocking on. You know, I got pulled over by the U.S. and the Mexican military on the drive back going through Temecula. And they were going through Tecate, actually. And they were knocking on the barrels. They thought I had drugs in the barrels. They thought I was like bringing them back. And I'm like, no. I didn't know what to tell them. I'm like, oh, they're for my garden. They're for my garden. Like,
yeah, seems like that'd be a rookie planters. Move, you know? Yeah. Like,
and they're like, all right. And they're like, this gringo, like, let him go.
Yeah, that's
just put a sign on. No drugs, yeah, no drugs in here.
No drug us.
How did you come up with the concept? Like, what was the vision for this? There's so much going on in the bourbon world. How'd you get started? And what was the thought process behind
Cap's still in there
doing what you do?
It kind of built upon itself. Like first it was, let's put wood in whiskey. And, you know, we were going to call it infused. Like we ran this thing. Full, like this, we'll call it the 5 years prior to launching any whiskey, I started and ran a vodka company called Infused Spirits. And the 5 years summarized into 5 seconds is we had a product, a vodka that actually put fruit in the bottle of the vodka. So every bottle actually has fruit floating around inside of it. Lemon peels, peaches, cinnamon, apple, mango, habanero.
We did a shit ton of that back in high school.
Yeah.
Was it actual fruit or just flavored Jolly Ranchers? Yes. I think that's different, Jeff.
Yeah, it was great. It is different.
That's an Azima.
Yep. Sorry to cut you off.
No. That's kind of, everyone starts with Jolly Ranchers. That's always the first one back. Gummy bears, sour worms, all that shit. Just kind of turns to mush. So we did that and we're like, all right, we can infuse vodka. What else do we want to infuse? So we came out with bitters and whiskey. And the idea was, all right, we're going to come out with infuse. I owned it all. I bought the domain names and trademarks for infused gin, infused rum, infused tequila, infused whiskey. I bought it all at one shot. Because I was like, all right, we're going to expand out on the shelves with the Infused brand. And the brand is called Infused. Like, that's the name of the brand. It just says Infused Spirits on the bottle. Probably not the most creative name, but that's what it's called. And we've sold, you know, millions and millions of dollars of it, so it's working for whatever that amounts to. But we're like, all right, we're going to do this with whiskey. But we really quickly realized, like, there's an attitude and an ethos around we weren't going to put the wood down the neck of the bottle. And that has since happened. There's another brand out there that did that. And they seem to be doing pretty well with that. So, you know, it's kudos, like, to them.
Oaken
Eden, I was worried, right? About,
yeah, I think
I was worried about like splinters in the throat and shit. So I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Makes sense.
They seem to be doing fine. So maybe I should have stuck with my guns.
You just gave somebody a class action idea out there. Sure.
Oh yeah. Well, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to filter it. I wanted it to be clean because I'm a pretty purist. I cut my teeth in whiskey by By nature of working with a Scottish guy from the get-go, 2012, I'm 24 years old and I'm drinking 50-year-old scotch and selling Alexander Murray single malt scotch with the owner's son all around LA and his son and his owner's son's Mercedes, like pulling up outside of the Palms and Fleming's going, you want to buy my fruit infused vodka and this 50-year-old scotch. But you know, when we got back at the end of the day after a long day, like we would drink the scotch. It was like, you know, $1,000 bottle of scotch or $20 bottle of vodka. Like, all right, well, I'll just drink the scotch. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. It changed my life. It changed my whole world. Cause, you know, I'm a whiskey, saw the room. I'm a whiskey fanatic. And so we knew we were gonna do a whiskey pretty quickly after vodka was taken off. And we're like, we're gonna do this and we're gonna make this work. And yeah, we did the infusion thing, but we kind of didn't even really put together that this was a finished whiskey. And, you know, we were doing stave finishing. It was clearly a name and class of whiskey for what we were doing. We just weren't calling it that unknowingly. So we were kind of finishing stave finishing before we knew what stave finishing was. And as we built the brand and started getting ready, and then even like to the hammers and axes and all that, we were doing a video and we're like, what would look cool on the video? Let's go buy a sledgehammer and break the barrel. Cause it's called it was called Infused Spirits Broken Barrel Bourbon. That was the original batch one iteration of this. And actually, good segue, that product is the small batch whiskey. So that hasn't changed. The formula for the very first bourbon whiskey we ever put out in 2017 is the same formula of that small batch. So I welcome you to either, you know, slug the rest of what you got or dump it and then go into the small batch there.
This will be up to it. This is 95 proof, right?
Yeah. Now, so 95 proof. So same whiskey, 70% corn, 21% rye, 9% malted barley, Owensboro, Kentucky, 95 proof, 47.5%. Now the difference here is going to be, we've added sherry cask. We've taken out the 80% Cabernet. We've doubled the French oak from 20 to 40%. And we've added a 40 more percent of what we would call that double barrel ex-bourbon cask.
And this is your original. This is your first one. It's the same recipe.
That's the OG right there.
This is the OG. This is right. The same recipe we've had since the get-go.
A winner. I see why it still hangs around.
It's our number one seller, although I will tell you a bit about the next three. The next three get really interesting from like a story and, you know, kind of accolades and all that.
The aroma on them, man, they like a lot going on there.
What's crazy is the 95 proof, because of this is heavy on the oak for me from the 88, not in a bad way, but you get what you think is alcohol burn, but is actually oak. The 88 seems a little hotter than the 95. 95 is a little smoother because it's a little less oaky, but that's just to me. I don't know if that makes any sense. That's good. Really good.
Very good.
That's the expert.
He did. What was the difference in the oak bill between the small batch and the California oak?
Small batch is going to be the 40% French, 40% ex-bourbon or double barrel, and the 20% sherry cask, which is that intensified sweet dark fruit flavor you're looking for in a sherry cask finish. The California is Cabernet, you know, big, bold, distinctive wine, and it's Central Coast too. So you're talking Paso, Santa Ynez, all that. A lot of people divert kind of default to Sonoma or Napa, even Willamette Valley and all that. So we like Central Coast. I have a lot of friends and relationships and contacts in Central Coast. I've got friends of friends that know all the winemakers in Central Coast. So we've actually got a really good handle on getting great Cabernet barrels from Central Coast and from the Valley there. And so it's really nice to have a different source, I guess, of Cabernet from California than the regular or the norm, right? So this is we're you know we I don't have really the connection to Napa I don't know anyone in Napa personally. I haven't spent any real time there. So I didn't find it to be genuine or sort of authentic to do that.
Are the barrels easy to come by? Are the wineries like trying to get rid of them when they're done? Or is it a hindrance?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like our pallet collection out back.
Well, prices are going up. I mean, certainly inflation and whatnot, like new barrels for them are costing more. So used barrels are costing more and prices are going up. You know, we held price for a long time. We finally took price up in 2022 for the first time. And I think there's one more price increase for 2024. But I don't know if that, you know, for those listening, go out and get it now while it costs what it costs. Because things, you know, it's all going to come to a head and everything's just costing a tiny bit more.
I'm probably going to piss some people off here, but
if you're good at,
if a bottle of whiskey that you like, if you're a connoisseur and you're going out there and you're buying stuff, if a bottle goes up $4 or $5 or $10 or $12 or something.
Oh, not
like that,
that much. Not you
know,
that much.
I'm just going over the range. If it went up $2 or $3, you know, most people that are whiskey connoisseurs probably wouldn't even notice or have a problem with it. The problem you have is the guy that has to buy a bottle or two a day. It's an alcoholic that that's going to have a problem that he knows exactly. Like, I know when my pack of cigarettes goes up by 20 cents.
Sure.
Right?
But I think that's...
But I buy a couple bottles a week, and I'm not going to worry about it.
They're more like a Jameson customer, per
se. Well, that's what...
I don't think they're looking at... Point. Yeah. I don't think they're looking at a finished whiskey and interested in what barrels or staves it's been finished or blended with.
Ooh, this is a dollar more than last time.
That's exactly my point. So are you... Do you actually get blowback when you have a price increase?
No. And I think the difference, too, is that we're in a lot of states. There's different state taxes. There's different shipping rates. There's different, you know, elements.
Costs different wherever you're at. Yeah, you never really know.
And there's also buying power. You go to a Costco and they're marking it up X percent and you're going to a Total Wine and it's, you know, slightly higher. And you go to like a fine grocery store out here in California or you go to a really high-end, you know, wine and spirit shop in New York or whatever. And, you know, you go to six different stores that carry Broken Barrel in call, you know, let's pick Atlanta. We're really big in Atlanta. You might see six different prices in six different stores. So at this point in time, I don't think we're big enough or distributed with the frequency that someone could be like, hey, It's the same store customer, like you said, it's going back again and again to their same store, and they're going to slowly see the price go up in that store. That's the person that's going to notice. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm a weirdo, but I don't go to the same store. I try to spread my money around. I try to support as many people as I can. So I try to buy – I pick a beer. I like Weinstephaner German beer. So if I go get Weinstephaner, I'll buy that brand wherever I go, but I don't go to the same store every time. I go, you know, if I'm on vacation, I go to the store there. If I'm in this area, I'm by my parents' house visiting with their grandkids, like whatever it is, I just pick up the beer I like, but at the place. And that's when I might notice, like, hey, it's a little more expensive than I'm used to paying because I buy this brand everywhere. And here it's a healthy 20% higher than what I was used to paying back in, you know, I don't know, Culver City or whatever, right, wherever you're located. So
where are you guys at in the Chicago? Are you in the Chicagoland area?
Yes, we are with Binnie's in Chicagoland. So we do have, I think, most of our SKUs there. I can't say definitively all of them. They probably don't have the next one you'll try, which is the Americana. And there's another segue.
Nicely done.
Nicely done.
Just slug the next one.
Set
and then
it
we'll-
up. Knock it down.
How many states are you in? Or
we are in about 35 states with the whiskey. Okay. We're going into Alaska, which is kind of exciting. Hmm. I'm going to go out to Anchorage in the second half of this year, and we'll be with a retailer out there called Brown Jug. So I don't know how many Alaska listeners you got, but
we're fucking huge in Alaska, dude. You have no idea.
Big on the CB.
Yeah, the Inuits are fucking in.
Building a lot of hot rod sleds.
Yeah.
Well, what's the, so let's not to ask you guys too many questions because I know you know you're listening.
Ask away, dude. We're just
intricately, but
this is a conversation. This isn't a fucking
oil.
Interview.
Let's talk about the oil for a second. Like, walk me through. Like, you guys are car and automotive aficionados. Is that the
you might accurate? Say that. Yeah, it might be like for you looking in. You might think like, what the fuck are these guys starting to like mix motor oil or something? Which could be an interesting concept, right? But
probably not.
No, just, dude, we're in the, like, hot rod chassis manufacturing automotive aftermarket. So probably stuff you see in, you know, if you're in the L.A. area, I'm sure you see a lot more of it than we see here in the Midwest. But, you know, if you see a little, like, 30s hot rods, roadsters running around town, that's kind of where we got started. But muscle cars, custom cars,
yeah,
all sorts of interesting things to, just like bourbon, something like a hobby you can spend lots of money on and collect lots of it.
Three of you guys have careers in that field, or is that...
believe it or not, yeah, lots of people questioned whether you can actually have a career.
Make a living doing it.
In this field, and we've done it. We're 20-ish years for Josh. It's like 40, 50 years in. But yeah, it's a, you know, it's a bigger industry than you might think. You know, very niche, but yeah, pretty cool. I mean, it's prominent out in Southern California for sure.
Well, I've got a great uncle that is very into building out. He's worked with Porsche his whole life. Porsche, I should say, to be correct, right?
You would be corrected.
Yeah, we've been scored.
So Porsche, and he builds. I'll get the name of his team, but he's raced some cars and he's done some of that, and he's built up and. You know, he's crowdfunded all that and put together some cars and put them out on tracks and whatnot. So it's been pretty interesting. He's got his whole career has been in that. So I find it very fascinating. And I've always admired what he's done. And his name is Sam Abergele. I don't know if you guys know the name or whatnot.
I heard the name.
Yeah. I should look him up.
I wanted to say it was Abergele Automotive, but I'm not. I don't want to misspeak and embarrass myself. But I do want to send him this podcast afterwards and make sure he
send
hears
it. Over.
Yeah.
As we talk about it, you know, you start thinking to go back to the automotive side of things. Remember all the stories about guys, you talk to that old hot rodder who, you know, was spraying lacquer and he had it on his hot plate and he's like, pour a little bit of beer in there, pour a little whiskey in it. You don't think you could market like just a splash of like synthetic Mobil 1 or like 2050 Castrol or just
let me answer your question.
Like a floater. Legally,
probably not.
You absolutely 100% could market it. You'd never be allowed to sell it.
Okay. But you could, like, for your friends, you could.
You just splash a little. Well,
you can,
little
for splash. Your friends, you can pour whatever the fuck you want. You don't have no idea what I've poured in your glass. I mean, we've done like 200 episodes.
I'm starting to get a little sleepy. I feel like this is hitting me like harder and faster.
I found it. It was Abergele Motorsports.
Abergele Motorsports.
Wait, pull that back up because I think I can make out what that race car is.
It's a full-fledged race car.
Like a Mazda Miata in Golf livery?
Yeah, so he does all this stuff. He's got his own team. They've had drivers. I mean, this is his whole life. Like, that's crazy.
I thought for sure Phil would have known then. Yeah.
Do you know?
Somebody, I guarantee it's like probably 1 or 2 degrees of separation.
Him and Phil, I'm sure running the same circles.
We'll have to follow up. We've got each other's email addresses. We'd like to connect him with Phil's a Miata guy. Big Miata guy, we've kind of haven't talked a lot about.
I'd say
that,
enthusiast, but that's cutting. That's selling it short.
I know he works for Porsche, and I know he's done a lot of. He's done Fontana, and he's done.
He's obviously into race cars. I mean,
that's championship presented by Toyota. About it.
He must have a death wish with those fast cars.
Yeah, he's into it. He's into it big time. Nice. So. Definitely, I will have to connect everyone.
Small world, man. You don't meet a lot of Miata racers on the podcast. So that's,
you don't.
How does that make you feel? Is it nice to?
Yeah, it's good to find my people.
Are you a Miata guy?
Huge.
According to them, yes.
Yeah, pretty big.
Huge.
Yeah. It started, honestly, this started like episode one. There was a comment made about a Miata, and unfortunately, you know how things go. They got legs. And once the fans started leaning into it.
You think it was the fans or was it you two assholes?
Well, once the fans started leaning into it and we realized the disdain that Phil had for it. Then,
and his impeccable lap times and the way that he late trail breaks. And you know.
Yeah, we couldn't let it go and we won't let it go.
All right, back to the bourbon.
Yeah, so tell us
about
this.
We've talked enough about us.
We've talked a lot about Phil. Let's talk more
about Americana.
The Americana is a nice break from the first two. We're going to split you up and take you a little bit outside of Owensboro. MGP, we all know they make a lot of whiskey. They make their own whiskey. They're the source of some of the largest brands. They just bought Penelope, for example. So they've got a lot going on. We're sourcing a pretty obscure product and not too many folks outside of our circle here of kind of whiskey, you know,
weirdos,
experts and or advanced level, whatever you want to call yourselves. I'll call you aficionados. Yourselves, myself, like we know MGP, we know light whiskey. I can even get into the history of light whiskey, why it was created, how the category developed, all that.
I'd love to hear that. But you can come back. You can come back around to it if you want to.
Yeah, the long short of light whiskey is during the late 1960s, it was a influx of white spirits from Europe. And you have vodka and gin really dominating. 007 is taking the world by storm. And people are kind of bored of bourbon. It's their grandfather's drink and they're not into it so much. You know, it's not the 1930s and 40s anymore, and young people want new hip drinks, and they're drinking, yeah, it's like seltzers today,
yeah,
which I think will start to, you start to see companies like Jim Beam putting together these mega deals with Coke, where they're doing, you know, Brown Forman doing these deals like Jack and Coke and actually getting the Jack brand and the Coke brand on a co-branded product. I would have never in my life thought that would be, they could never get the paperwork across legal, but they did. And they did. And it's like, because the seltzers and the RTDs are ready to drink are taking the world by storm. And I was in Tahoe this past weekend and all the guys are drinking freaking Trulies and White Claw. And I'm like,
you say all the guys or all the girls?
Guys, the guys are drinking this stuff. And I'm like, are you embarrassed? Are you going to take that out in public? They're like, hell yes, what we drink. I'm like, okay. I didn't say anything. I was like, all right. I tried one. I'm like, it's not for me. But
those guys don't drive me at us.
They don't drive me at us.
It's a fact.
Yeah. Well,
Dean's driving me out as we're putting something else in their mouths.
Yeah, but the kind of idea here is that, you know, I think the RTDs today are the vodkas and gins of the late 1960s. And so you have a lot of folks in the bourbon world going, holy shit, you know, costs are high, bourbon, new barrels, these rules existed. And so what they ended up coming up with was, how do we make a whiskey that's going to combat these white, clear, flavorless, odorless spirits, vodka specifically, and then gin, obviously, as another entrant and threat to the industry. So they come up with, well, let's change a few things. And to get really technical, bourbon comes off the still at 160 proof maximum, right? But if you obviously increase the proof off the still, you increase the yield. And you get more out of every run on that still. And so if you can get that up to 190, you're getting pretty much pure alcohol. And pure alcohol is odorless, flavorless, colorless. And so it's going to have less of the flavor of the grains that were used to create it. What's the cheapest grain? Corn. So what is light whiskey generally? 99% corn and 1% malted barley. So you're getting rid of these expensive flavoring grains like rye and wheat. You're increasing the yield and decreasing the flavor by going up to 190 proof. And then you're going into the barrel at whatever the fuck proof you want. I believe it's a maximum barrel entry proof for bourbon at 125 proof. Light whiskey, not the case. You can go in at a higher proof. I think you can go in at like 80 proof. You can go into the barrel and you can go into a used barrel, not a new barrel. There's another cost saving. So more yield, more proof, more. And then the plan was to take this stuff out of the barrel, even at a high proof, like 80 proof, and dilute it down to 40% and call it spirit whiskey or light whiskey. And so all of this made for there are some old fun labels that if you look up like the 1960s and 70s labels, Kessler. Kessler is a blended American whiskey. I have a bottle up there on the shelf. It says smooth as silk, right? It was about smooth. And so that's kind of the history of light whiskey, is it was this combatant to vodka and gin for the whiskey makers to still have a really good spirit. And what ended up being the case is there was blended whiskeys were all the rage, and or at least what everyone was selling or trying to push through the late 70s, 80s. It was, you know, and again, you hear these stories about how Asia saved the bourbon market by continuing to consume and kind of buoy the Four Roses, Sazerac Company, and all the Buffalo Trace, and all those guys were really held together by not the American market, but actually the Asia market in like Tokyo and all these other major cities that kept consuming their whiskey and still to this day have custom mash bills and priority products you can only get there and blah, blah, blah. So it's a fascinating history. And as you learn about all that, you go, okay, let's fast forward to today. What's really in with whiskey is finishing. And how do you impart the most flavor from a finishing barrel into a whiskey? Well, it helps that whiskey has very little flavor. Now, what's interesting about light whiskey is while it is way less expensive than bourbon, it's also easier to get a hold of older light whiskey because a lot of it is sitting and aging from many years past. They were producing it for call it a few select customers that maybe didn't hit their quotas or didn't hit their projections. And now there's a lot of it that's been sitting 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 years. And it's a fraction of the cost. I mean, 12-year-old light whiskey may cost as much as 2 or 3-year-old bourbon. And when you're going in to finish it and you really want to see the impact of those barrels, think about light whiskey as this really full-bodied, viscous, thick spirit that doesn't have a lot of flavor. Time is the body of the whiskey. And finish is the flavor of the whiskey. So when you think about bourbon, you're going into it, the barrel, the new charred oak, never had anything in it before, barrel is giving that bourbon lots of flavor. So even young bourbon has a lot of flavor. But a well-aged light whiskey will have a much better body, longer finish, really good components and aspects that a young bourbon might miss because it's had a lot of time in oak. It's been broken down like a meat that's been smoked for 36 hours, right? It's you've broken down the fats. Being metaphorical.
No, I get you.
Broken down the whiskey. That's why really good scotch, even though it may not have a lot of color because it went into a second, third, fourth fill bourbon barrel. A lot of great well-aged scotches, like a 25-year-old, whatever, you know, Highland Park, may not be the darkest whiskey if it's not a sherry cask finish and picking up all those red wine colors. If it's a bourbon cask, which a lot of scotches are, they'll be pretty light. You know, 25-year-old scotch is going to be the same-ish color as like a 3-year-old bourbon because it hasn't had anything in that barrel. So the long, long, long short of it all is, you know, light whiskey's got a lot of great aspects to it, but it may be missing and lacking some of that flavor.
So it's prime for finishing.
I'm not concerned about because all I'm doing is adding flavor. I'm like the seasoning guy who comes in and seasons all the meat.
You can't.
It's like Salt Bay over there.
What? And this is, I'm learning.
Yeah, doing one of those.
You can't fake canvas. The viscosity then.
You can't cheat, short, trick out viscosity. Viscosity is going to be a component of time. And I will tell you openly that I would not. Other than the cask strength, which is a lot more whiskey and a lot less water because it's 115 proof. So you're looking at over half of that being pure straight up alcohol. And therefore it is a little more viscous. You're not going to be able to cheat that. You can cheat the flavor. I wouldn't call it cheating, but you can enhance the flavor to a point where
you can try and mimic the flavor, right? Yeah.
That's the focus. I think the focus of a lot of our whiskeys is going to be the flavor. and a nice finish versus the depth and viscosity of an 18-year-old bourbon. And we're priced accordingly. What perturbs me as a consumer is when I see a whiskey that is disingenuous. So maybe it's called Old Kentucky and it's from Indiana and it's not age stated and it's not finished and it's not blended and it's $160 a bottle.
Yep.
And my blood starts to boil. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this is doesn't make sense to me. So I get a little irritated at brands that are kind of coming in and taking advantage of a name or a place or a style or a design or marketing, and they're just kind of pump out young, cheap sourced whiskey at a really high price point, you know, $100, $150, $200 a bottle. And there's just nothing to it that is innovative or creative or unique. You know, we trademarked the oak bill. We created that. That's not like a term that we looked up and were the first to actually put it on a bottle. We made it up. We created it. We trademarked it. We own it. And so we're trying to add more aspects to the element that to the industry that we're trying to add more aspects to the industry than were here before we got here. If we're just doing more of the same, I don't think we're really adding anything, and therefore we're not really contributing. And so I try to contribute. I try to make sure that we're doing, you know, envelope pushing and boundary crossing and those kinds of things.
And for a reason. It's mind blowing to me. I never would have thought that there would be, you know, light whiskey at MGP that was of that age. Cause I thought, you know, the light whiskey, and I'm a novice, but I thought that was kind of like that was like your staple. Like that's just thing that they produce because that's filler, that's blenders. That's like, we've got to always have the light whiskey because everybody uses that. And that's just like, you know, it's a staple, but I had no idea that there was 10, 12, 15 year old light whiskey sitting around.
Not a lot of it. And a lot of it's gone. And a lot of the stuff that is coming out was purchased at 7 or 8 years, 5 years ago by folks like myself that are, you know, waiting for it to be double digit and then we're going to release it and put it out. And yeah, you know, my personal opinion is I'd like to pay about, you know, $10 after. I think anyone with the right, you know, accolades, awards, with the right recognition and packaging, a unique enough concept. Like if you're your own distillery and you know your costs and it costs you an arm and a leg to get going and startup costs and you got a 2-year-old bourbon and you're, you know, blah, blah, blah distillery from this city in this town and you want to charge $50 for your bourbon, I have no problem with that. And I'll be a customer all day for someone trying to make it. But if you're sourcing and you're not innovating and you're not, you know, I tap out at $10 a year. So if you got a 10-year-old whiskey and it's not your whiskey, but it's $100, I'll be a customer. But if you're $200 for a 5-year and it's not your whiskey and you didn't finish it and the packaging is the stock bottle and I happen to know what is and is not a stock bottle, and you don't have my attention. You don't have my money. I'm not going to be a customer of that brand or product because it's just not. Sorry, like I'd just as quickly go online and buy a Remus from MGP or a Rossville or whatever, and directly buy from the company, give them my money rather than, you know, so and so.
Yeah. That's the best piece of advice I've heard in 2 seasons. The $10 a year thing.
That really is good.
$10 a year.
It's phenomenal. It's
great.
Because I've got a threshold of like, I'm like $50-$60 that I'll roll the dice on something that doesn't have an age statement. But yeah. I typically am looking for something that just has like 6, 8, 10, 10 to 12. I mean, we've talked about that quite a bit. Yeah. That's the 12 that's is the, our that's sweet, the spot. Sweet spot. But you should expect to pay like, you know, $80 to $100, $120, somewhere right in there. But yeah, you start seeing something that's sitting on the shelf and it's like $150
with no age statement. No,
and
a brand you never heard of.
Gimmicky bottle with a beautiful label. And you're like,
That's a full blown gamble.
But it's a stock bottle. A lot of those are stock bottles still, which also gets me a little like, I don't know about that. But, you know, all right, so back to our stuff, and I apologize. I've got about 10 more minutes.
No problem. Oh, shit. Sorry.
This afternoon. But the Americana is going to be that light whiskey blended with the Kentucky straight bourbon. The light whiskey is much older. It's about twice as old as the bourbon. So it is kind of uplifting the viscosity and sort of the density. And then again, I try to do all these things that I think are inherently American. So brand new charred oak, char four bourbon barrels that have not seen any whiskey yet. Break those up, put those in there, 40%. Toasted barrel, which are low and slow heat applied to the wood versus that high, fast, you know, 60 seconds and it's starting to crackle and break up.
That's got a great smell.
And then, yeah, we've got the last one is 20% apple brandy. And this is American apple brandy, not Calvados or French, European.
So we skipped brandy. One.
Yeah, we jumped the rye because we're short on time and most of us.
Well, I can tell you about the guys, rye. But if anything, with me on, you got to try the cask strength.
That's where we're at.
Yeah, we went to
that. So the Americana is the 40-40-20 and it's 100 proof. Our rye whiskey, I'll just tell you, our Heresy Rye has won four different 93-point scores. So it is the 93-point whiskey. It just keeps getting 93 points from, you know, whiskey, wine enthusiast and from Ultimate Spirits Challenge and from Peggy No Stevens, who is one of the, you know, she's like the official female bourbon whiskey taster. I'm sure you know of her. It's just a standout, awesome 95.5 Kentucky distilled rye, not Indiana 95.5 mash bill. And I'm excited to tell you guys that our cask strength bourbon was awarded the best finished Kentucky bourbon 2023 at the World Whiskey Awards, which is the big kind of gold square you see on a lot of bottles. Like if you look above my head right here, this is the Cavalon. They've got their World Whiskey Award right under my finger, right above my finger is that big gold award. We got that same award. It's actually sitting right outside my office, right over there on the wall. You can kind of see above the frame there. It's our World Whiskey Award. We got best Kentucky finished bourbon. That's so again, awesome. Angel's Envy is like, you know, Kentucky finished bourbon. Davies County, Blood Oath from Lux Row. All of those are Kentucky straight finished bourbons.
That's going to feel pretty good.
We beat them this year as the best Kentucky straight finished bourbon.
It's well deserving. That's a great flavor.
It's a great pour. It's a great pour. 115 proof.
When you talk about those comparisons, like I've had Blood Oath. It's a great looking bottle. The cork's cool. The label's cool. I've never liked it. I've bought like two or three of them.
None of them doesn't ever
do
it.
Yeah, just does not do it for me. This is great. I dig it.
Yeah, you can get about three of these for the price of one of those. These are about $45 to $50.
Oh wow!
So across the board, what's the price point across the board on
the other? On the other four bottles are all going to be about $35 to $40, and these are going to be $45 to $50 for the cask strength. Cask strength is about $10 higher, give or take, depending on where you are. And I'll also tell you that in that same competition, our company was humbled and gracious enough to have been awarded the most innovative whiskey company in America this year. So that was really cool too. So we won Brand Innovator for America for 2023. So
now
people are catching on to what we're doing.
Are you guys carrying the sledgehammers and axes into these award ceremonies? Is this like an intimidation thing?
I think we're going to just break a barrel right there.
You ought to.
I don't know if you're like pressuring them into it. I mean, it's great.
It's a little mafia approach to it.
Yeah, it is very good. It's interesting to know. I'm glad that I didn't know the price point going into this and drinking, because I would drink all of these. I would definitely
I would have guessed these were $80, $90, $100 bottles.
Yeah, I thought they were up there. You know, but that's a great price point.
No, not even close. No, so you should be able to
buy two or three for that price point.
You should be able to buy at least three bottles, mix and match for a $100 bill easily.
That's awesome.
These are really, really good. I know you've got to go. I want to ask you, what is your personal favorite out of all these?
I like the cask strength, and I will easily, with my wife, in the course of a month, we go through about one bottle of the Heresy Rye every month. So
we're going to drink the Heresy Rye after you have to go. We've got a couple more segments to go through, so we're going to get into the Heresy Rye for sure.
Get into it. Yeah, get into it. It's a really, really great, easy drinking. It's good for, I mean, it's priced to the point where you can make a Manhattan or you can make an old fashioned with it. It's really good. It's got that kind of like little sherry note. So when you add like a nice vermouth or something to it and you're doing like a little bit of a, you know, heightened cocktail, like it's really, really good. It's a good step up from like Rittenhouse or Overholt. And it's priced under like a rare breed or something in the higher proof. So 105 proof, definitely going to give you a little more oomph in your cocktail. And it's great. It's great.
I know that's really great advice. It's always difficult to find, you know, rye makes up typically you're reaching for it on your Manhattans and stuff. Yep. And it is always tough to find what that right one is. You don't want to grab that $100 bottle. You don't want to grab the $30, but you want something that's, you know,
this got the spice and the height.
Exactly.
The hot
proof. I think the proof matters too, a lot too.
I know you've got to go. I'm going to ask you two questions before you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So fire away.
First off, best piece of advice that you've ever received.
It is better to own half a watermelon than an entire grape. I was doing a deal and somebody said, well, we'll go 50-50. And I went to my parents. I was 22. And they said, well, why are you giving him 50%? Like, that's too much, da-da-da. And I went back to him. I said, oh, my parents said I can't do this deal. You know, I was 22. I was asking my parents how to do business deals. When my dad's a doctor, my mom's a teacher, so they're not business folks. And he said, listen, buddy, you know, I respect you, respecting your parents and all that, but I'll just tell you, it's better to own half a watermelon. You get much more full off half a watermelon than you will owning your whole grape.
That's really good. All right. I like that.
Next up, you are one of the last three people alive on Earth, right? You cannot find your Broken Barrel whiskey, right? But you could find any other whiskey known to man. Cost is no option. You just walk in and get it. What is the bottle that you go and grab?
this is probably going to get me judged, but they're not expensive bottles. I mean, if I'm just drinking the same thing, do I have to drink this whiskey for the rest of my life? I can never have anything else.
This is your last sip of whiskey.
Yeah, this is your last sip of whiskey. The world is coming to an end.
Oh, I'm dying. This is my last sip.
Well,
of whiskey.
You could live. Mine. Yeah, you have no idea.
Who knows?
But the world is coming to an end.
Before dehydration sets in and all that.
Bardstown Bourbon Company collaboration number one with the white label square bottle. It's the Muscat Mistel. Finished 10-year with the 47% 94 proof.
Damn. It is Bardstown white label.
White label.
Yeah.
Can't buy it anymore. It's long, long, long gone. It was the original big fat square bottle with the 5-pound cork. It was good.
Have you had any Linnell's Red Hook Rye?
Have I had Linnell's Red Hook Rye? No. Is that yours?
No, that's not ours. No, that's... we've got a couple of bottles of our newer stuff, but yeah, the last Linnell's Red Hook Rye, I think sold for $140,000 or something like that.
Oof. Yeah, no,
I wouldn't pay that for a barber.
I could have picked like Pappy 23 or something, but I never actually sat down and drank that.
That wouldn't be my bottle either. Pappy wouldn't be my bottle. If that's the bottle, that there was no right or wrong answer. I wanted to hear honesty.
My favorite thing in the room. Like people go, what's your absolute favorite thing in the room that isn't yours? And that's usually what I direct people to and whatnot.
That's cool.
And, you know, if there's a similar question I get asked all the time, which is, all right, you can only have one bottle. It's not your bottle. And what are you going to drink on a desert island? You know, this is what you have to drink for the rest of your life. You have to drink this again and again and again for 50 years. Well, for me, 50 years. I'm 35. So let's say I live to 85. 50 years of drinking the same thing, and it can't be your whiskey, because I would have picked probably Heresy Rye only because it's a little easier to drink long term than cask strength. And I'm worried about I might have Barrett's or whatever. So I got to worry about that. But I would say Heaven Hill Green. 6-year,
really,
the 90 proof, not the 100 proof white one, the 6-year green label that was only available in Kentucky. That shit, I bought a lot of that. I probably killed more of that than anything else that wasn't Broken Barrel. That's my second favorite after Broken Barrel.
Well, dude, I know you've got to go. We have got to do this again. And I want
we'll send you the fancy stuff. We'll send you guys like the rare Americanas, which are age stated. We'll send you the.
How do we get on the list for the rare drops, man? We'll pay for them.
We'll just do the rare drops. We'll do a part two.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
Let's do it.
Good luck. Right, awesome gentlemen. Stuff, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm sorry, where are you guys located?
Chicago.
If I get to Chicago, I want to sit in that room.
Let's do it.
Come on by, man.
We'll make that happen. All right. Awesome. Deal.
Sounds
all
good.
Right, guys.
Thank
cheers.
You. Appreciate take it easy.
Take care. Have a good one.
You too.
We're going to get into this.
I'm going to switch the rye up. Let's go with a
new glass.
Glencairn glass.
Start
for
fresh.
That. Yeah.
Dude, I was trying to. I was trying to bring up. Have any of you guys seen this? Because I stopped by the liquor store. This Fourgate.
Ryan bought a bottle.
Did he? Because it's big money.
Yeah, it's like $150, $160.
Yeah, you've got $174, $179, $199, and the label's covered, so I don't know what that one is. But they've all got. We've got a 7 year, and that's it. Yeah, seven.
Yeah, Ryan said he got sold pretty hard by the guy at the counter.
Yeah.
Trying to move product.
No bueno. Said,
wasn't that great?
Yeah, I was skeptical just because something to come out.
Did you buy it?
No, I didn't. I did not buy it because that's why I took a picture of it so I'd remember it. Because at that price point, you don't roll the dice. Yeah. You know?
Swirl technique is key.
Get a little aroma. Yeah,
if anybody's out there that's tried the Fourgate Whiskey Company.
DM you and let you know.
Yeah, comment, throw something out there. I'm curious. Save me $179 if it's terrible.
Should start like a whiskey share type thing. You have everyone else's responses, kind of help the community out. Buy it, don't buy it.
That's a great idea.
That's what I'm here for.
I think you need the red. There's always red flag. There's the ones that are just clear. Stay the fuck away from it, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's palate's a little different, but I think most people would agree when you encounter that one that's like
Basil Hayden's.
That, yeah. Well, a lot of people drink the shit out of that, except you.
But I'm trying to think. It sucks. Nobody, there's not a lot of people.
No, somebody brought it up. Who, damn it, I'm trying to think of who it was.
That liked it?
Yeah. Yes, and they felt bad. You shit all over hurt them. Somebody's feelings.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because they're like,
I just didn't like it. They can like it.
No, you hated it.
I like Vienna sausages. Doesn't mean.
That's true.
Yeah, you also grew up in like Southern Alabama, dude. It's like.
Central.
Central.
Yeah.
I think that's worse than Southern, isn't it? Because there's the ocean down there.
The biggest city is in the central Alabama.
Anyway, good idea, Phil.
It is.
Somebody should put that up.
We do need an oil and
whiskey share.
Collective. Whiskey share.
Everyone chime in with what they like, what they don't like.
Maybe we'll start a chat room.
Like an AOL chat room.
That'd be a code, cool. Special code to get in. It's got an aroma.
It's almost got like a musky scent about it. You like it?
It does have a little scotchy.
Yeah.
Scotchy.
But not in a bad way.
Scotch. I think it'd be great in a cocktail.
Yeah, it'd be phenomenal in a cocktail.
It's interesting.
There's people out there that like the rye neat that are going to be like, you guys are fucking pussies. But
I like some rye. I'm hit or miss.
I'm with you. There's sometimes I'm like, holy shit, I like that flavor and that spice and the stuff.
Have you got one that's a standout?
The rye?
Yeah.
I really like the Barrel Bourbon Seagrass rye. Like, that's phenomenal.
You like that Peerless rye too, don't you?
The Peerless rye is amazing. Yeah.
Peerless rye is good.
We drank it and I didn't know it was a rye.
Yeah.
I think I liked it.
Yeah. That's the Peerless Sweet Heat one that was like a barbecue rub.
Yeah, that one was good.
Flavor. Green Peerless.
This is good. Great for a cocktail.
Yeah.
I'm not a, there's been a few rare ones, but for the most part, I'm not a, excuse me.
Yeah, the ones I like are always a little bit on the sweeter side.
I don't know if it's got enough kick to it for a cocktail. I feel like you want something that's got some.
I like the Smoke Wagon straight rye. It was good. It had a great flavor.
Yeah. The Smoke Wagon pretty much that fucks across the board.
I do think.
Good stuff.
This is going to be weird because.
Are you going to rank them?
I loved the 115 flavor. And I know I've been on a kick on the proof.
Here we go.
This was.
Here we go.
I love the flavor. It was a little bit on the hot side for me.
Oh.
Right? But I love the flavor. I'm wondering, and I've got another glass. I'm wondering.
Oh, you're going to start blending, aren't you?
I am going to start blending.
Here comes the creativity in Josh.
The Americana.
Old Josh, the whiskey blender.
The Americana was great for something. Maybe it was the first pour. I love the flavor of the 88.
I like that one.
Sweetness, smoothness, and stuff like that.
I like that in the middle one. I think are my two favorites.
The 100?
Yes. The.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Americana.
All right. Well, I'm going to make you something up. I'm going to make you something special.
Seth's probably cringing now as he's watching this.
He's not watching it.
Fucking morons.
He had to go. He had another podcast.
I think Master Blender was his title, not yours. What's the ratio you're going in there?
60-40.
A little bit. Is it crazy how many people are Miata enthusiasts?
That was, man, you could not have asked for a better fucking picture than that.
I think he could have.
When I went to bed last night, I said my prayers. I was like, please.
Wow. out of all vehicles, here's a guy, you know, no offense to him, but he knows nothing about cars at all, it sounds like, and a fucking Miata race car shows up.
You said race car.
Yeah, well, it had racing stripes on it.
I think it had flares on it, too.
Dude, they looked like bushwhacker flares. Little stick-on bushwhacker.
They were flares. You got to get tire underneath them.
What's the max tire you getting? You got to roll the fenders?
You got to get a round one.
That's a 215, I think.
You're being generous.
The 215, if you do the Dunlops, they'll fit. I think but the BFG's got a little bit more sidewall. They flare a little.
Well, you stretch them. You get a 7-inch wheel and get a little angle on that sidewall.
Miata more badass?
There's no fucking way, dude.
This is the second argument like this I've won in 2 days.
There's no way. You're not winning shit. There's no way. There's no way a Miata is more badass than a Fiero. Say Pontiac. Let it roll off your tongue. Pontiac. It's fucking badass, dude. And, like, Pontiac
was a brand.
Trans Am. No. All right. Trans Am. Fucking Firebird.
So you're going Fiero. By the parent brand is that it's more bad because it's a Pontiac.
Mazda. MX-5.
RX-7.
MPV.
Yeah, the MPV.
Yeah, fuck with an MPV.
Yeah.
That was an all-wheel drive
Who wins
minivan.
In a fight?
Pontiac.
You get the Pontiac posse together.
What was the wagon? What was the Pontiac van?
Vista Cruiser?
No, it was the Pontiac.
Oh, yeah, that was nasty, dude. The wedge? It was like a space shuttle. Yeah.
What was the Pontiac? Damn it. Was the Oldsmobile had one, too.
Fuck, what was it?
It was let's look it up.
Google it.
We have the power of the internet.
Ventura?
I think you're close. I think it's
Pontiac Ventura, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. Lock I just like bids. Doing this because Paul is listening and he's ready to go to bed, right. And we're making.
No, this was short, dude. We're not at all.
Yeah, we just touched an hour.
Simply put, guys, you get Pontiac enthusiasts or Pontiac owners.
Nobody
together.
Has ever said that.
Oh. Dude.
You have GTO enthusiasts, but you don't have Pontiac enthusiasts.
Trans Am Firebird. Dude, probably some of the most badass cars ever created.
For those cars.
Yeah, shortly after.
Nobody's a fan of Pontiac.
Dude, not more than a decade. Fiero.
Sunfire.
That was later.
Sunbird.
Yeah. Everything went downhill like in the 90s, like the late
90s. 1993 Pontiac Transport.
Oh. Tell me that thing's not... fucking badass. That's 20 years ahead of its
time. That thing is not.
Get the white one. Second picture over. that's the future.
Dude, that car comes out this year. Street Machine of the Year. That's like.
You're fucking high.
But this year.
Oh, that thing hasn't aged.
In middle school.
1990?
There was 14 of those lined up.
That hasn't aged?
Dude, it's 33 years old. It hasn't aged
Now, if you would have done that, if it had been the Transport SE, look at that. How you couldn't have even created that.
I think George Barris was involved in that.
No, that was Daryl Starbird, I think, that did that one. The bubble top.
I think there's going to be a lot of listeners that are going to correct you guys on this. Hmm. I really do. I think you guys are...
Well, if you're fucking listening right now, go ahead and comment down below.
I think you guys
whether
are
you think
off
it's
your rocker.
That Pontiac... Mazda's still around. Pontiac's done.
Okay, ooh. Here, let's. Okay, there's a build off, right? There's a. Remember biker build off?
Yeah. This is. Somebody should fund this. Mazda versus Pontiac.
No, build somebody off. Fund this. You give me the Mazda or the Pontiac. What the fuck is it called?
Again? Transport.
You give me a Pontiac Transport, and you two fucking morons get a MPV.
Mazda MPV.
And look at, there's one modified at Curbside Classics, a fucking convertible. Look in the middle.
I think that's a hot tub in the back.
Yeah. How, dude, that's sick. It's like a cabriolet.
Looks like a doorstop.
Dude, it's got Testarossa styling. You see those ribs in the side? Look at that.
Does it?
For aero.
Yeah. I guarantee you I'd defeat both of you in a build-off.
For an MPV versus a Transport?
Yes.
You're fucking high.
You're crazy. What?
Dude, Mazda.
I go to the MPV.
All right, let's pull it up.
If you take out the banner cars from the 90s, when did they discontinue the Fiero?
Nobody knows.
Okay, late 80s, maybe early 90s.
When they sold, we got to 20. Okay. They sold 20 of them. You opened, they were like, oh, this, fuck, we're not going to sell 21.
You open my garage, and I have a mint Fiero. Oh,
I fucking dream of that day.
And a Transport.
You're not getting back out of that garage, I guarantee
versus a Miata and an MPV?
I could understand if you had a Transport and a Fiero, I'd get that. It was his. Yeah. I would completely understand
granted, that. Granted, that would
somebody's got to run and get the kids. No,
that would only be taking up two places out of probably the 20 places in the garage because that's a man of means. That's a fucking mansion. You'd be lucky.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Talking $7,000.
The all-wheel drive MPV. They can go anywhere. Yeah. You're right. Fucking, that sucks.
Yeah, that's in a carport, right? And the Miata is behind it on a busted-ass U-Haul trailer.
Yeah, absolutely not.
No. There's no way. No. I defeat both of you.
I don't think
dude, it doesn't look like that's modified. Look at a stock one. That's got a lift kit.
It says four-wheel drive.
Yeah, it's got a lift kit and
it's graphics. It's got
aftermarket graphics. Get a stock one. It's
got a bug deflector.
Get a stock one. I want to see the way it rolled off the showroom.
Right there.
No, look at the one, the green. Yeah, that sucks. That's the way it looked when you picked it up at the fucking dealership. That's the worst.
Looking at that right
that's
there.
That's the most.
It does kind of suck.
Yeah, that's the most generic. That's a
Playmobil car.
That's a minivan. Just. Yeah, you said it. That's a Playmobil minivan.
Hold on, we're going to get to...
Yeah, it's modified, dude. Neither one of you have the vision to execute that, though.
You're crazy.
That's just a J.C. Whitney catalog. That's not really vision.
Yeah. I think this is going down. What about that one? Yeah, you could do
what
it.
What if we get like a JDM right-hand drive?
That's what I was just thinking. I was thinking of that.
You, right-hand drive, center drive. You could put the steering wheel over the fuck you want. I'm walking all over you guys in this competition.
With a Transport?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's try our blended whiskeys.
Yeah.
You didn't get one.
This is the rye.
This is Team Mazda.
Yeah, I don't want to drink it anyway. Because if you made it, it probably sucks. Just like your MPV is going to suck.
There you go. You can try that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Master Blender Josh Henning.
Master here. Blender. It's not that hard. Take a little bit of what you like and a little bit of what you like, and you put it together. You might like it. What did you think of that one? That was your 88 and your 100 blended. Mine was 88 and 115 blended.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I like the Master Blender's blends individually, not
I appreciate
quite as
that.
Good together.
I super appreciate
that. That was
that.
Not directed at you. Mm. That was kind of drinking them out of the bottle.
Yeah, you're right. Mixing shit just never does well. What are we supposed to do now?
That's a wrap, dude.
It's over?
That's it.
We still got whiskey to drink.
Drink
it? Hey, it's all in fun and games. We're not making fun of you.
Dude, I'm checked out right now. My mind, I'm focused.
In the Transport?
I am focused on my creation.
Do you think you could do a Transport front, lengthen it into like basically a wedge, like a Transport, and then put the Fiero on the back?
Like a ramp truck?
Yeah, like a ramp truck. Yeah. You know what you could do? You could do that. you could take it, right?
I know where you're going with this because you want it to be super wedge-shaped, probably tapered at the front. Is that where you're going?
Oh, yeah. I'd make it I'd make it aerodynamic. Well, good part about the transport.
You can go either direction.
It's omnidirectional. Yeah.
I hate you.
Either direction be fine.
You guys have all seen that van, that 80s van that takes the jet boat in the back. Everybody's seen this.
Yes. It's been on Bring a Trailer 16 times.
Just think all those aerodynamics, those wedge shapes. Think of the way I'll make that Fiero just nestle.
I'm thinking about how aerodynamic it is right now.
Bet you are.
Big thanks again to Seth. We got to do that again. It was fun. He had a lot of knowledge.
I want to go to his place and check out that bourbon collection.
Yeah. The bourbon collection. Very knowledgeable dude. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You got to drink that much to get that level of expertise.
No bullshit. Just because he was on here, if we didn't like it, we'd tell you he's not on here anymore. But it's good shit. If you see some broken barrel,
grab it.
Dude, especially at that price point. I thought it would be double that per bottle.
Remember, you can keep up with Seth by following along on Instagram at Broken Barrel Whiskey and at Ben Himes Whiskey. If I can turn the page.
.com.
Thanks for listening to Oil and Whiskey with the Roadster Shop and Ironclad Original. If you like the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. That's down below. You got to leave a rating. Review is when you're like, I liked it.
I think they're comments.
No, there's a review portion in... Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
All right.
Now, if you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment. Be like, yeah, transport's cool. Wink. And we'll know what you mean. Thanks again to our guest, Seth Banheim. We'll see you again next week.
You look like you're going to punch him.
I'm going to defeat you on the field, dude. That's what it's going to happen. This is exactly like one of those, you see all those like fighters talking all that shit. And then you're like, oh my God, that guy got destroyed. He should not have talked all that shit. That's exactly what's going to happen here.
What do we have to do with the transport versus the MPV? What's the competition? A show? We're going to go to a show and let all of our peers judge him?
Yeah.
Oh, you're fucking done. MPV, they made an all-wheel drive one. Transport, they didn't. They did one. They did the transport.
You don't think with my skills...
They did digital gauges.
That I can make... I can convert that to all-wheel drive.
Well, then like it's not that. Not a transport then. No, you have to deal with what you're dealt with.
We're modifying them. Oh, that's what we say when we get a car. Oh, hey, customer calls. We've got a. Hey, man, I'm sorry, dude. You got to deal with what you were dealt.
Like, so this is a custom build off then.
Yeah, it's not like we're just taking them off buying them off of Craigslist and showing them against each other.
Seems like that'd be the better financial decision.
Oh, okay. I think this is a great idea.
You will lose.
I think we need to do a show, a 0 to 60, or just drag race. Hey, we can do a drag race.
You honestly think you can beat me?
And then we'll do a set course. Yeah, and then it's best scores win. Yeah.
Save yourself the trouble.